We're now going to resume. I had promised Advocate Mpofu to give him back the 15 minutes where we would have interrupted his cross-examination at 11:45 with that discussion. Advocate Mpofu, I want you to resume and wrap up and up until 2:30. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Chairperson. Hopefully I can even finish before that. Can we... good afternoon, Mr. Kakana.
Good afternoon.
Yes, there's an email that you would have been shown during the lunch break. Can if Admiral Power has got it, she'll put it up.
You have it? Okay, it's been processed, you put up.
Thank you. That's an email from you. Remember you said no, the quality check was only done in respect of the draft, but not the final report.
Yes, I remember that.
Yeah. Now, that email is from you to address to Busisiwe Mkhwebane, Public Protector, 17th June 2017 at 1:52:05 p.m. That is 2 days before the release of the report, correct?
That's right.
And then you say the subject is final draft, all right?
Yes.
And then you say, hi PP, find attached, excuse me, find attached all the inputs discussed. Unfortunately, Matlawe is not here. I think he wanted to say here. I went over it and have cleaned it all up. Regards. You remember that email?
Yes, I think I remember it.
You think you remember it? Okay.
I remember it, Constable.
Thank you. The emails then obviously suggest, firstly, it relates to the earlier instruction by the PP for you to run this by Matlawe. You remember that, the one before lunch?
The one before lunch, weren't you referring to an email in May?
Yes. I was referring to an earlier email. I can't remember the date now, but whatever. Let's say it was in May, June, whatever it is. But it's the same. The point I'm making is it's the same Matlawe that she had instructed you to do the quality assurance at the drafting at the draft stage, correct?
Yes, it's the same Matlawe.
Yes, and therefore you are explaining here that For this particular instance, Matlawe is not here, but you had done the quality check, correct?
Yes, I had done the quality check.
Therefore, you it was false evidence to say that no quality check was done before the final draft, correct?
No, that's not correct.
So the final quality check that you did was not before the final draft. Which part is not correct?
After I made my own quality assurance, Matlawe had to do the quality assurance as well.
Yes, but you said, unfortunately, he was not here. How can that be? Was that the fault of the public protector?
No, I don't know whose fault was that, but I do state that Matlawe is not here.
Yes, but Mr. Kekana, please, man. The impression you were creating was that the public protector did not want the report to be quality assured. That's what is being reported in the media. I'm trying to demonstrate to you that, firstly, it was quality assured by you. It was probably quality assured by Matlawe after she instructed you to do so in May, and that at this stage, to the extent that it might not have been quality assured by Matlawe, it was because he was unfortunately not here, according to you. Is that a fair summary of the position?
Chair, my position is that the final report was not quality assured by Mr. Matlawe.
But it was quality assured by you.
I indicated that.
All right. Now I think that's fine. I think the members will just make out of that what they should. Now let's go to TK4 quickly.
Yes, I'm there.
Right. This is the document that she said was handed over by the economist from FSA, correct?
That's right.
Right. Now, it says it is recommended that the following sections in the Constitution relating to the South African Reserve Bank be amended as follows, and that all corresponding legislation be duly amended. Okay, you and I established before lunch that there's nothing wrong with recommending a constitutional amendment. South Africans do it all the time, and even our favorite commission, the Commission on State Capture, made recommendations like that. Remember that evidence?
I remember we spoke about that, Council.
Yes. Okay. Then the 224(1) that is now the clause of the Constitution. And the recommended changes are following. The primary object of the South African Reserve Bank is to promote balanced and sustainable economic growth in the Republic while ensuring that the socio-economic well-being of the citizens are protected. You see that part?
Yes.
Now, how can that be harmful to anybody, ensuring that socio-economic well-being of citizens are protected? Do you find it harmful?
As I indicated before, I didn't understand what was the purpose for us in going for an amendment of the Constitution, as I did not find it relevant to the investigation.
Okay, that's fine. Congratulations. But do you, apart from all that, think that the socio-economic well-being of the citizens is something that is to be commended or promoted? The protection of the socio-economic well-being of citizens?
Yes, in general, I believe that we should protect the socio-economic well-being of citizens.
Thank you, Mr. Tekan. And the next one is, the South African Reserve Bank, in pursuit of its primary object, which is now the socio-economic well-being of citizens, must perform its functions independently and without fear and favor or prejudice, while ensuring that there must be regular consultation between the bank and parliament. Remember, the original document said the cabinet, and then it was changed later to parliament by the public protector. To achieve meaningful socio-economic transformation. Is there something wrong with that? In general, in the same vein as the previous question?
Well, in general, yes. I wouldn't believe there wouldn't be anything wrong with protecting and transforming socio-economic of the country.
Yes, thank you. And, right. And is it fair that someone whose only sin is therefore to promote the socio-economic well-being of citizens be projected by the real owners of South Africa as an incompetent and a mad woman?
I don't know what are you referring to, the chair. Maybe can I be assisted on that?
No, I'm saying, is it, you live in South Africa, is it, do you regard it as fair that someone whose only sin is to suggest that there must be all these things we, you and I spoke about, socio-economic well-being of citizens are protected, should be protected by apartheid apologists and clever blacks as a mad woman and an incompetent mad woman?
Chair, I've indicated my general view that indeed it wouldn't be a bad thing to promote or protect the social economic well-being of our citizens.
No, thank you. No, I'm sorry, Honorable Chair.
Yeah, I just wanted him to conclude his response.
Okay.
Are you done, Mr. Kekan?
Yes, I was done, Chair. I was just saying that my view was that in general, it's not a bad thing to promote or transform socio-economic well-being of the citizens of the country.
Thank you.
Okay.
But, excuse me. Now, before we get to the last topic, I'm just going to ask you something about the Gupta leaks. Firstly, let me preface it by saying that the public protector will deny that she said you must not rely on the Gupta leaks. The only thing she did was to caution about the authenticity of some of that information. Because at that stage, remember, you have to think back, this is 2017. At that stage, there were some questions that were being raised. But she never gave you a blanket ban not to use that information. Would you agree with that?
Okay, as I indicated, I was only informed by Ms. Ndo that the PP did not want us to follow the Gupta leaks.
Okay, that's fine. Now, yeah, Ms. Ndo will then come in and talk about that, hopefully. Excuse me. So sorry, Mr. Kekan, I won't burden you with what you got from somebody else. But I'm now asking you a general question along the lines that I asked you before. Whether it is fair to do this to a human being, when she says that we need to be sure about the authenticity of the Gupta leaks, then she's condemned. When she says the IGI report has now been authenticated, I can use it, then she's condemned. What must the public protector do in order to attract the favors of the owners of South Africa?
Chair, I really don't understand that question.
I'm sure you don't.
You know.
It's fine. But no, it was about fairness, but I don't think, yeah, it's something you want to comment on. But the other issue is has then to do with your own personal situation. We've already dealt with your disciplinary hearing. There was an independent chairperson, correct?
Yes, I believe there was an independent chairperson.
Thank you. But I'm just doing this apropos. I don't want to get into those issues as to why you were suspended and so on. But just again to highlight an issue that I raised with you yesterday about the difference between investigation and adjudication. By the way, were you aware that Mr. Nemasisi held a view regarding this matter of the differentiation between adjudication and investigation? Did you come across his opinion on that issue?
I don't recollect. Are you now referring to the Freder report?
No, no. I think, in fact, I'm not sure whether it was a general opinion or whether it was in respect of a particular report. But we will deal with that with Mr. Namasipi if he's called. I just wanted to know whether you are aware that he has those views.
I don't recall. Mr. Namasipi made a lot of inputs on numerous reports. I don't recall that particular one.
Yes, no, I agree with you. And Mr. Namasipi also wrote about something that I think is going to be relevant for this committee, namely the right to a hearing. Remember, one of the big things about this process we're under are the instances where it is said that the public protector did not give so-and-so a right to a hearing before remedial action. Are you aware that Mr. Nemesis, one of his well-written opinions, I must say, was to the effect that there is no need for a person to be given Audi twice? And by that I mean, if you get your hearing before the preliminary report and the findings are made against you, then it comes back to the public protector. For the remedial action, there would have been no need to give you a second Audi. And that practice is what was followed. Are you aware of this? If you are, you are not.
I remember there was some debate around that, but I don't remember how it was concluded. But I do remember that there were those that were saying that there was no need for a second Audi, and there were those that said that there was a need for a second Audi.
Yes. No, thank you. No, that is fine. And in fact, that question was only settled in the CR17 case more recently. But during your time, you are quite right, there were different views about it, correct?
Yes, there were different views, if I remember well.
Yes. The other one, and you're saying you're not aware of which of those that Mr. Namasisi strongly supported.
You mean the view about Audis?
Yes, no. I'm saying I was putting to you the proposition that Mr. Nemesis was a strong proponent of the view that there was no need for second Audi. I'm asking whether you are aware of that or not.
I did indicate that I remember there was a debate about that, and I also think Mr. Nemesis also made his contributions towards that.
Sorry, I've been asked to...
You are muted, Albert Mpofu. You are muted. Or you're not talking to us. Albert Mpofu.
Thank you, Chair. So no, I'm sorry, I was being alerted to the fact that my personal emails were being displayed, probably a fault on my side. Yeah. Can you hear me now, Chair?
Go ahead, please proceed.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you, Chair. Yes, that problem has been rectified. Okay, that's fine. That's fine, Mr. Kekana. We'll deal with Mr. Namasisi if and when he comes on those issues. The other point which and I'm asking you this because you are a legal person who was involved with these things. There was also a view which was held that the so-called two-year bar that is put in Section 69 of the Public Protector Act is a matter that is in the discretion of the PP. In other words, if a report, and let's take the CS report as an example, you know that the CS report related to events that happened in the 90s, correct?
Yes, that's correct.
Yeah, that even though the investigation was on a subject that was more than 2 years old, the public protector, if she felt that this was in the public interest, would have jurisdiction over it. That was another debate among the legal people in the public protector. Are you aware of that?
I remember something like that.
Yes, and that one actually, it was only for the first time it came to before our court in the matter of Godan, I think the Pillay matter, or one either the Pillay matter or the Rogue Unit matter. But again, that was after your time, correct?
I think that's correct.
Yes. Right. In the same vein as I spoke to you about the issue of the DA or any political party, when we went to lunch, you and I were debating about the expert that was called by the evidence leader ever comes back. We'll deal with it at that point. But let me put another proposition to you, and I preface it in the same way by saying the public protector will deny the insinuation you were making that she instructed you to remove politicians from the Friday report, for the reasons that you were suggesting.
As I indicated, I was only informed by Mr. Ndoh that
okay.
We should remove those.
Okay, that's another Mr. Ndoh special. Okay, so Mr. Ndoh didn't tell you, insofar as any politician were to be removed, as to why that would be so?
I don't remember any reasons being advanced.
Yes.
I remember it being as he indicated, as an instruction.
Yes, but that what I'm saying is that the reasons for an instruction or advice or whatever it is, you did not know. There might have been a good reason or a bad reason or an indifferent reason. You don't know.
No, I didn't know.
Yes. Okay, now let me ask you the question I asked you, which is a more theoretical one. If, in terms of the investigation, it was clear that the responsibility for certain actions should be leveled at the level of the executive management of government and not at the level of politicians, I'm saying if that was what the evidence was showing, would there be anything wrong with the head of the public protector or the NPA or any institution saying that those persons who are not implicated must be removed? Is it necessary, is it compulsory to have politicians implicated even if the evidence might not point that way?
I'm not so sure, Counsel, which question I should. I think that you have two questions in your proposition.
Okay, answer the last one. Is it compulsory for politicians to be implicated even if there's no evidence?
Well, if there's no evidence, then they shouldn't be implicated.
Yes, and if they are wrongly implicated, well, not just politicians, well, even you and I. If they mention you in a report and it is clear that you are not directly involved, shouldn't your name be removed?
That's correct. If we find that there's an error on our side to include you, then we will remove it.
Thank you. So the point I'm making, Mr. Kekana, is a simpler one, that, you know, the hullabaloo about the mere act of removal or even insertion, for that matter, is meaningless unless if we know whether there was a good reason for that name to be included or excluded. I'm sure you would agree, just as an investigator, to that general proposition, correct?
Yes, as I indicated, Chair, if there were no findings of any wrongdoing of any individual, then it would be fair only to remove that from the report.
Right. Yes, I was saying attorney, the investigation on you that was being conducted was conducted by attorneys, independent attorneys, correct?
Yes, I was informed that the Alemokashwa was in making some form of investigation.
Yes, and that was around the issue of your alleged, well, it's no longer alleged now, it's true, of your abuse of information which was, which reached your computer by mistake.
Well, at the time when I learned of the Alemokashwa, I didn't know there was an investigation against me.
Okay, fair enough, yeah. Okay, the last thing I want to ask you, Mr. Kekana, is that, let me first put it to you. I'm going to add you at the end that literally anything that you have said should be taken with a pinch of salt, if it should be taken at all. Actually, it should not be accepted at all because you are an unreliable and dishonest witness. What would you say to that?
Chair, I've given evidence to this committee, and it's up to the committee to use that evidence any way fit.
Yes, and that the only true thing that you have said in this commission, in this committee, is the fact that you did all this and entered into all these affidavits in order to avoid charges being leveled against you, further charges, being leveled against you. I think there you were telling the truth. That's the only motivation you have in life. Any comment?
Chair, that was not the only truth. I provided all the information to the committee to the best of my knowledge.
And that you knew and you know, as you have now confirmed in your testimony, that the interactions with FSA were deserved because they were the signatories to the CS agreement, and there were those missing transcripts. And that there was nothing untoward with those interactions, as you have now subsequently confirmed, correct?
Okay, I indicated that we needed to interact with the SSA to get a version from them, which we never got.
Yes, and you also, I will also add that you know, despite all the verbal gymnastics to portray it otherwise, that the meeting with the presidency and not the president, and that one you have confirmed, that meeting was only to deal with the issue of the SIU, because proclamations of the SIU on are only dealt with at the level of the presidency. And that was the only issue discussed in your presence in that meeting.
Chair, it wasn't the only issue that was discussed in my presence. Yes, I do confirm that we discussed the SIU in regards to the remedial action.
Yes, and Mr. Nemasisi was also part of that meeting, correct?
I'm not so sure. I think he might have come also at a later stage, or I even found him there. I'm not so sure whether he was there.
Yeah, but last year, on the 28th of March 2021, you did an affidavit for the police to assist in the prosecution of the public protector, correct?
I remember doing an affidavit, that's correct.
Yes, but you did it to the police to assist them to prosecute the public protector. Yes, among other things, for the unfounded charge that she had met with the president. That's what she was being prosecuted for. And you assisted in that process.
Yes, I was requested to provide an affidavit to the law enforcement agencies.
Yes. Anyway, the point I'm making is that you said in that affidavit that Mr. Nemasisi was in the boardroom. Does that assist your memory now?
No, in the affidavit that I have, I don't remember mentioning Mr. Nemasisi.
Does this ring a bell? On 7 June 2017, I was invited to a meeting held at the private office boardroom. When I arrived in the boardroom, I found Advocate Nkoban and two other ladies. Advocate Nkoban introduced me to the two ladies and indicated that the ladies were from the presidency's legal services. I cannot recall their names. Also present at the boardroom was Mr. Ntumbe Nzeni Nemasisi, former senior manager at the public protector. Yeah, that is important, but I cannot recall whether he joined the meeting after me or whether I found him in the boardroom, which is what he said.
Yes.
But the question about his presence, you testified to it.
Yes, and I indicated that I wasn't that cleared up whether he was there or not. Whether I found him there or not.
Yeah, so that I agree to you. That's not what I'm talking about. I'm talking about his presence. Yes, sir, please.
I'm asking you to wrap up now.
Yes, sure. I promise. It's my last couple of questions.
You said this was your last question, but at least now I've given it further 5 minutes. Please wrap up.
Okay, sure. No, I thought it was my last topic, but I take your point, sir. I know I've gone past the half an hour that you gave me. Anyway, Mr. Kakana, unfortunately, we can't go through all your inconsistencies. I look forward to seeing you when you come to testify in the criminal proceedings. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Advocate Kupofu. Thank you. That concludes that cross-examination session. Just before I invite and recognize members present here and in the virtual for their own interaction, I'm going to recognize Advocate Bauer, as I indicated that she might have one or two issues she just wants to clarify before members come in. Advocate Bauer?
Yes, Chair. There's three issues that I need to raise, and maybe The first one has got to do with this simulated subpoena that was raised by Advocate Mpofu yesterday, and to make sure that there's no suggestion that the evidence leaders was involved in any manner in trying to mimic a subpoena. Endeavors were made to contact Mr. Kekani. He didn't respond to the overtures. Advocate Mayosi sent him an SMS or WhatsApp. On the 23rd of May, she inquired as to whether she could speak to him. He confirmed a time in the late afternoon when she called. He didn't respond to the phone call. Subsequent to that, a letter was addressed. He indicated he wasn't minded to give evidence before this committee, and I then indicated, in which case, given that there was an affidavit in the public domain, we would liaise with the chair for purposes of issuing a subpoena. Subsequent to the issuing of a subpoena, I indicated that we should make contact with him again and see if he was prepared to talk to us. We had a Zoom meeting with him for the first time, which was our first point of contact, Thursday night after our proceedings on the 14th. My opening question was, Mr. Kekana, can you please take us through your evidence? His response to me was, if you want anything from me, ask me questions. We had a short meeting with him then. I then asked him whether we could have a follow-up on Sunday the 17th, at which stage I sent through and scanned him various documents which I had, which I then also provided to Advocate Mpofu, indicating that I wasn't necessarily going to use it, but because I gave it to Mr. Kekana, I furnished it to Advocate Mpofu. Those same documents as what was item 40 before the committee today, including the handwritten notes which we had in our possession, which did not include the handwritten notes of the 3rd of May because we didn't have it. Just to put to rest any suggestion that we may have been complicit in soliciting what Advocate Mpofu referred to as a simulated subpoena. So that was the first issue. The second issue is that there was a newspaper article on the 17th of December 2019 issued by Media 24. That newspaper article is part of Bundle F, item number 39. I had indicated to Advocate Mpofu last week that I was going to refer the committee to the article for the following reason. It's what alerted me to Advocate Mr. Kekani's statement, and that I had made contact with the media company and obtained from them. The article effectively says a senior state security agency official had confirmed pivotal details of a whistleblower's account over the conduct of the public protector. And so I inquired from News 24 what confirmation they had received in respect thereof. And to see whether that confirmation was reflected in the newspaper article. The newspaper article details a number of issues, and News 24 then obliged and provided me with the questions that had been asked of the spokesperson at the SSA on 14th of December 2019 and the responses that they received to that, which for purposes of completion and because I obtained it, I had provided this to Advocate Mpofu on Sunday, and I do owe him an apology. I had told him about it last week and then I couldn't find it. I had mislaid it amongst the hundreds of documents that we had been provided with, and then only sent it to him on Sunday, which is why I didn't raise it yesterday, so that he had an opportunity to look at it. And effectively, One has to look at the questions that was put for James Ramabulana and the answers that was provided by them in that regard. And I'm not, the committee will get a copy of this, but there was, and I don't think this is an issue, that the meetings occurred and that he attended both meetings on the 3rd of May 2017 and 6th of June 2017, and that the minister and Mr. Fraser was present at the 3rd of May 2017. And then the third question is, can you confirm why you were asked to accompany the minister and DG to this meeting? And the response was, it was within the context of a request that the meeting of the 6th of June took place. I indeed attended the meeting of 6th June 2017 as part of a follow-up earlier meeting. I was with Mr. Moodley. And the fourth question is, do you deny that during this meeting, Mr. Moodley, well, some of the answers are joined into that. So he confirmed that he accompanied the minister and the DG and that Mr. Moodley attended. And then question five is, do you deny that during this meeting, Mr. Moodley handed the public protector a typed note containing the wording of a recommendation that was to be included in a final report that ordered Parliament to amend the constitution to effectively nationalize the Reserve Bank? That question was not answered. The next question is, why did you fail to correct the public protector who introduced Mr. Moodley to a staff member as an economist, despite the fact that the question is, he are not, as it were, an economist of any kind? And the answer is, I cannot answer why I did not correct the PP when she introduced Mr. Moodley as an economist, as I expected him, Moodley, to do so. In fact, I can't even remember what she said. At the time, he was the advisor to the DG on technical matters and had, for that matter, worked in the economic sector before. For information, he had worked in the banking sector, the Reserve Bank to be specific. But that does not mean that on the day in question, he, in my presence, wrote the report. I understood his role as that providing the requested technical support case management system. And then the next question was, can you confirm that you were involved in drafting the recommendation? And if not, who assisted you and Mr. Moodley? And that's not answered. And then, was the nationalization of the Reserve Bank a stated project of the State Security Agency or of yourself and a small grouping of senior SSA officials? If not, then why was the SSA involved in drafting a recommendation that had the ultimate effect of amending the Constitution under your leadership? The answer is, as for the SSA, as far as I'm aware, we never had a project on the nationalization of the South African Reserve Bank as insinuated by the media. And the next question is, did you discuss the recommendation, its drafting and or act of handing it to the public protector with either Mr. Arthur Fraser or Mr. David Mahlobo? And the answer is, no, I was not part of drafting the report in question. My only part was answering questions on the CX report. In fact, I was not familiar with its contents until the media wrote about it. And the last question is, why have you remained silent about your role in handling the recommendations of the public protector during the years of litigation surrounding the report? And the answer is, it is anyhow the mandate and or legislated role of the SSA to advise any government department, state-owned enterprise and public institution, the PP included, on any matter pertaining to national security. It must be noted that national security encompasses / includes political, economic, social, environmental, scientific and technological issues. It must also be noted that the SSA can only advise and or recommend to its clients decisions of the sole function of its clients, national, provincial, local government, department and SOEs, including public institutions. And then, so this comes up in the context of the evidence that Mr. Kakana gave as to the events that occurred on the 3rd of May and the 6th of June, and I'm raising it because we do not have the member of the SSA as a witness on our list. We have endeavored to make contact, but there are certain protocols in place for SSA members which we haven't overcome, and we may not necessarily need to in light of this. But given that I did obtain the information, which is only fair that I or provided to Advocate Mpofu and put it before the committee. There is one other issue which I neglected to raise early on, and Mr. Kakana was asked about having provided a confirmatory affidavit. And so that there is no confusion over the context of the confirmatory affidavit, it is provided. Advocate Mpabani provided a replying affidavit to the Constitutional Court in the proceedings before the Constitutional Court. That replying affidavit is at 11. I just want to give you the reference to that. It's at 1829 of the bundle A of the, sorry, no, it isn't. The page, it's 1152, is the reference to Mr. Kikani in that affidavit, where it reads, what was discussed at the meeting of 7 June 2017, when that's the meeting with the presidency, is clear from the handwritten notes taken during the meeting by Mr. Tebogo Kekana, senior investigator who assisted me during the investigation. The handwritten note was disclosed as part of the Rule 53 record and is annexed hereto at RA1, which form part of the record. Confirmatory affidavits of Mr. Kekana and Mr. Nemasisi are filed herewith. And then the confirmatory affidavit is to be found at 1178. And Mr. Kikana confirms the reply deposed to by Advocate Mkabani and the contents thereof insofar as it relates to him. And I should have drawn that to the committee's attention during his direct examination. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Advocate Bauer. Honourable members, I want now to note both from the virtual and physical your readiness to interact. I note Honourable Sukas, followed by Honourable Mailam, followed by Honourable Nwala, followed by Honourable Heron, Honourable Hermans, Honourable Mkweba, Honourable Gondwe, Honourable Lothrit, Honourable Olomisa, Honourable Melda, are you in? Honourable Tseke, Honourable Zungula, Honourable Masaule, Honourable Siabi, Honourable Nodada, Honourable Siwela, Honourable Dagude, Is that all? Honorable Trape? Any other? How do you know that I didn't call you? Thank you, colleagues. Honorable Maneli. Thank you, General. Those are the hands. Let's kick. Honorable Sukas, you said the same.
Yes. Thank you, Chair. Mr. Kekana, I just want to ask you three questions, and the first is, when you were appointed to the private office of the public protector, would you consider that a promotion? And was it explained to you why you had been approached and not your colleagues? And then I want to know whether the public protector interviewed you prior to your appointment, and what role did she play in appointing you? And did she approve of your appointment? Then lastly, how would you describe your working relationship with the public protector, and did it change? Thank you, Chair.
Did you get those questions, Mr. Kekana?
Chair, could I just have a repeat of the first question?
Okay.
My first question was whether your appointment to the private office, whether you would consider that a promotion, and if it was explained to you why you had been approached and not your colleagues.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Go ahead.
Okay, thank you, Chair. The appointment to the private office chair, according to my view, was not a promotion. I was still a senior investigator. No one explained to me, Chair, as to why I was being approached. I was just approached by HR, and they informed me whether I was keen to work with the PP in the private office, and I indicated my keenness. Chair, I was not interviewed for the position. From my understanding, it was a transfer from quality assurance to the private office. On the issue of the working relations with the PP, I would say it started out fine. We had very cordial relations. But I think after the CX report, and when it got challenged, and the ensuing consultations that we had with attorneys, the relationship between her and I became distant, if I may put that, Chair.
You done?
Yes, sir.
Honorable Sukas, any follow-up? Thank you. I proceed. Honorable Mylam.
Thank you, Chairperson. Chairperson, I have 14 questions. Could I ask that they be answered individually? Is that okay?
Come again?
I put a question and he answers, and then I put the next question and he answers. Is that okay?
I don't determine the style of a member.
Thank you, Chair.
I'm not sure about the number of questions, but the style, I don't determine.
Okay.
Anything else thereafter, I don't determine.
Thanks, Chair.
Go ahead, Honorable Mylam.
Thank you. Mr. Kekana, could you perhaps tell us why the public protector needs a political advisor?
Chair, I wouldn't be sure about that. That there was never any reason that was advanced to me as to why the PP needed a political advisor.
Just as a follow-up to that, should politics have any influence whatsoever in the investigations or decisions of the public protector?
According to my knowledge, no.
Okay, thank you. What role does a staff member's political affiliation play in the office of the public protector?
Usually it would play no role at all, because we would be entrusted as being impartial and doing investigations with integrity.
Thank you. Was there any evidence provided about Ms. Erica Saliers that she was a DA member?
Not that I'm aware of, Chair.
Thank you. Can you tell us why the public protector did not want the Gupta leaks allegations used in the Frieda Dairy investigation? And perhaps to contextualize it, if there are allegations, surely it's incumbent on the public protector to investigate them.
As I indicated, I was just told by Mr. Ndo that we should not follow that. And I have indicated that I did not get any reasons why we should not follow that lead.
On the same topic, do you agree that the public protector's decision to narrow the scope of the Frieda Dairy report or investigation was irrational? And I'm going to quote from the court versus the court in the DA versus public protector case, as it sidestepped all the crucial aspects regarding the complaints and led to a failure on her part to execute her constitutional duty. Do you agree with that statement?
I have a view, Chair, that in us drastically amending or reviewing that report where we took out most of the information, it wasn't the right thing to do.
Thank you, Mr. Kakana. Had politicians been implicated and or had adverse findings against them prior to the Frieda Dairy report? And if so, were their names removed from those other reports?
Chair, my memory, I remember seeing draft reports or a draft report with some form of finding against political office bearers.
Okay. Were the names removed?
Chair, from our report, we did remove the... I don't think our report had such findings, but I remember previous reports had such findings, and in our report we did remove anything that was negative towards the political office bearers.
Okay. You spoke about the meeting, and there's been a lot of discussion around the meeting that was held at the State Security Agency. Is it normal for the minister in any department to be present when the public protector does an investigation at their department?
Yes, sometimes we do have ministers attending such investigative meetings. And maybe just to correct that, Chair, we didn't have a meeting at the SSA. We had a meeting at the public protector's office.
Ah, thank you for that correction. Mr. Kakana, with regard to the email from yourself to Mr. Goodson, the full sentence in that email reads, "The public protector wishes to meet with you." Now, my question to you is it your opinion reflected on that email, or was it the view of the public protector that Mr. Goodson had extensive knowledge of the South African Reserve Bank and central banks in general?
The public protector had always wanted, or was the one that wanted to meet with Mr. Goodson, and I believe she had a view that he would be, you know, he would be useful in our investigation.
Thank you. In Report 8 of 2017, in Clause 7.2.1, it says, that particular paragraph refers to the remedial action proposing amending the Constitution. Was that the clause that the public protector requested or instructed you to insert?
Through you, Chair, let me just have a look at the paragraph, Chair. Can I be repeated?
7.2.1.
Yes, what was the question again, Chair?
So my question was that the sentence that the or the paragraph that the public protector instructed you to insert about amending the constitution?
That's correct.
Why did you find amending the proposal to amend or the remedial action to amend the constitution? Why did you find that, and to use your word, bizarre?
Well, according to me, it was irrelevant to the investigation. That's why I found it bizarre.
My last question is this. Is it normal for other departments who are involved in an investigation to provide the wording for a remedial action or for members of such a department to do so?
According to my experience at the Office of the Public Protector, it was the first time experiencing that, and for me, it was not normal.
Thank you very much.
You've just met my limit, just about there.
Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Honorable Mylam, Honorable Ngola.
Thank you very much, Chair. I hope Mr. Kekane did get lunch. It looks like you will need energy. Chair, I've just few questions which are emanating in majority from the affidavit deposed by Mr. Kekana. Mr. Kekana, Chair, alleges that in the CX report, a provisional report was leaked. Having been leaked, it was indeed as the series of statements he's making in the affidavit. It was perhaps in the hands of himself, Ms. Mashawe, and Mr. Mashawe and the public protector. But that information got leaked. It had material errors. It was not subjected to quality assurance as the provisional report. Has there been an investigation summoned by the Office of the Public Protector or the Public Protector to investigate how did that provisional report get leaked so that the office is able to prevent further?
Chair, if I remember well, I was told of the leak by the public protector. And if I remember well, I think the public protector did make a report to the law enforcement agencies in regards to that. Chair, I'm not aware whether there was an internal investigation at the Office of the Public Protector relating to the leak.
As an investigator and a report writer of the office, in the private office of the Public Protector, should you have been made aware if there has ever been any investigation summoned by the office to the leak, or any investigation done by law enforcement agencies? As a person who was responsible for the leaked provisional report, was it not expected that you should be made aware if there is any of investigation, whether internal or external?
As I indicated, I was made aware of the leak, and if I remember correctly, I think the PP did report this matter to law enforcement agencies, so I was made aware of the leak of the preliminary report or provisional report.
Okay. Fine, let's leave that. In the affidavit you deposed, There was a meeting with the Black First Land First Movement, which discussed the provisional report. Whom you say in the affidavit, it was said that they can't be a complainant in the matter. But you continue and say, however, Advocate Mkhwebane invited the BLF to make submissions on the investigation that the BLF was in no way involved in the matters pertaining to the investigation or any other relevant matter. If the PP allowed the Black First Land First Movement to be part or submit any issue as pertaining to this report, who is this person who said they can't be complainants in this matter?
Chair, the PP did indicate to the BLF that they couldn't be complainants in the matter.
But they were later allowed to...
Yes, sir, I do confirm that they were allowed to give inputs.
Okay. Then let's go to what you term as a private meeting or a meeting before the meeting you are supposed to have set with SAA and the SSA and the Public Protector South Africa. You mentioned that before that meeting resumed, you were shocked by a meeting before the actual meeting between the Minister of FSA, Honorable David Mahlobo, and the Public Protector. In the time when you served in the private office of the Public Protector, has it ever happened before, or it was the first and the last meeting that set before the actual meeting?
That was the only incident that I observed.
Okay. You say there is a meeting where the Public Protector actually instructed you not to record or take minutes, or else you're prohibited from taking minutes or recording that meeting. Were there any reasons provided to you as a person who usually records and take minutes of meetings between departments and the Public Protector?
No, Chair, I wasn't given reasons as to why I could not record.
Thank you. Apart from, let's go to the South African Reserve Bank constitutional amendment matter. You have answered from Advocate Mbofu and Honorable Milam that you believe strongly that the amendment of the Constitution, as it was suggested by the report, was actually irrelevant from the investigation you conducted on the Reserve Bank Bankop matter.
Yes, that's correct, sir.
Yes. Now I want to check that. Do you think that it falls fully in the powers and the jurisdiction of the Office of the Public Protector to suggest such kind of a major amendment in the supreme law of the country?
Chair, according to my view, I don't think so.
Okay. In paragraph 34 in your affidavit, you say you learned that the Public Protector has appointed new attorneys and counsels. In your experience as the person who closely was working with the Public Protector, what is the process of appointing or hiring legal counsels and attorneys?
Chair, I wasn't privy of that process. That process was being handled by our legal services unit. So I wouldn't be aware, Chair, of the process of appointments and terminations of attorneys and counsels.
Thank you. In paragraph 42, you allege that Advocate Mkhwebane did not care if the reports were taken on review or not. Do you mind if you can elaborate a little bit on that?
Chair, what I remember is that while we were going through the report, taking out information, Mr. Namasisi did warn the public protector that removing such information could lead to a review. And I remember the statement that she made that she didn't care whether the report would be reviewed or not.
Thank you. The last question, sir. It's the last, I promise. Did the South African Reserve Bank ask the Office of the Public Protector that it be finished with the report before it being published? If the answer is in the affirmative, has that request been adhered to? And the last would be, what is the general procedure in terms of your reports? Should there be not consultation of the affected persons before the issuing of the final report?
Thank you. Go ahead, Mr. Kekane. That's the last question from the member.
Thank you, Chair. I'm just jotting it down. Chair, can I just get clarity to the adherence of to meetings, Chair?
Yes, can you make it precise, Honorable Ngola?
I'm saying, has there been a request from the South African Reserve Bank that the public protector South Africa should finish it with the provisional report before the final report is issued? Has there been adherence to that? And what is the general procedure?
Chair, I on the score of the meeting with the South African Reserve Bank before the report is publicized, I don't recall, but I think there was correspondence from the Reserve Bank about the meeting, but Chair, I don't clearly recall, unless I'm shown a document which will refresh my memory. And Chair, in regards to consulting before the issuance of a report, Chair, my understanding is that if there were no significant changes, especially emanating from our Section 9 notices and our preliminary report, then we would not consult with the affected parties. But if after issuing the notices and or the preliminary report and we have significant changes to it, the right thing to do would be to consult with the affected parties on those changes that have been made, because we hadn't put it to them, those changes. So it would be proper to consult with them on the changes.
What's the proposal for that? Thank you, thank you. There's no follow-up there. Thank you. You've reached my limit. If I have a gap at the end, to do that. Honorable Heron?
Thank you, Chairperson. Chairperson, I also have one or two questions for the Public Protector. We're going to do it as we did once the previous time. At the end, thank you. Mr. Kakani, I want to just go back to the time when you were removed from the private office of the Public Protector. And you say in your affidavit at paragraph 37 that, and I think you've said it in evidence too, it was because you were saying too much to lawyers representing the public protector in the review proceedings. So was this about your previous evidence in your affidavit and orally that the public protector's recommendation came from the SSA and things like previous drafts of the reports should not be included in the review bundle, in other words, in the Rule 53 documents. Is that what you're referring to when you say too much to lawyers?
Chair, I did not get any reasons, but I did suspect that it related to that.
Mr. Kakana says, I was told that it was because Advocate Mkwabani was of the opinion that I say too much to lawyers. So is that wrong?
No, that, I'm saying that's correct. I was told that the PP said I was talking too much to attorneys, but I'm not so sure on which subject matters I was talking too much to the attorneys. I suspect that it might have been the issues on the SSA.
Thank you. Where, and when you were appointed as the lead investigator on the Freda Dairy Project after the removal of Ms. Erica Saliers, when was that?
Sure. I was also trying to, you know, resuscitate my memory on when we were allocated that matter, but I just couldn't find the time period or when specifically we were allocated that matter.
But were you still in the office of the private office of the public protector, or had you then been moved to the provincial integration unit?
Yes, and Chair, that's my problem as well. I don't remember because in December of 2017, that's when I was transferred to the provincial investigation and integration. I really don't remember when this matter was allocated to us.
So by us, I'm trying to understand whether you were in the private office of the public protector when you were first appointed the lead investigator of the Freda Dairy Project, or whether it was after you were moved from the private office.
Yes, Chair, that's where I'm struggling with my memory, Chair. If I would find a date, then I could confirm whether I was in the private office or whether I was in provincial investigations and integration. But my memory is failing me on that.
But in any event, Mr. Kakana, you continue to work on the Freda Dairy Project after being removed from the private office of the public protector.
That's correct, Chair.
And you said that Mr. Ndo informed you that, or instructed you that you should not include any finding against any politician. Is that correct?
That's correct, Chair.
Was that before the meeting on the 8th of February 2018 when you met directly with the public protector and the manager of legal services?
Is the question done or?
Yes, sorry, it's done.
If I remember well, it was before the meeting on the 8th.
So at the meeting of the 8th of February, the, you say in your affidavit at paragraph 42, the advocate Mkwabani instructed you to remove material information relating to the investigation, including information relating to the inflation of goods and information relating to beneficiaries. But she wasn't referring to any political or politicians in that meeting?
I think in that meeting there was no reference to that, because in that meeting, maybe let me take you a step back. At paragraph 41, I do state that Mr. Ndo from PP's instruction told us that we should remove any adverse findings against the politicians. On the meeting of the 8th of February 2018, Mr. Ndoh was not present in that meeting. So we were told to remove those adverse findings before that meeting occurred, not in that meeting.
If I may just move on, Mr. Kukana, to the meeting with the that the minister had with the public protector privately. Can you sketch the scene? How did you know that the meeting was private between the minister and the public protector? Were you waiting outside in a waiting room and you saw the two of them come out of the meeting? Or, I mean, how did you know that there was no one else in that meeting?
If I remember well, I did go to the private office when I was alerted that the meeting would begin. I think there was also a time for that meeting. So when I arrived at the private office, I don't remember who told me, but that person indicated to me that there was a meeting between the minister and the PP and that I should wait.
So did someone tell you that there was no one else present, or you saw that there was no one else present?
I think when they came out, that's when I noticed, because, when they came out, that's when I noticed that it was just the two of them.
Okay. Can we move on to the part when you do attend the meeting and you're instructed not to record the meeting? And also not to take notes. And as we've seen today, you did actually take some notes. What happened to those notes after you took them?
After I took those notes, I just put them in my file.
So they were then in the file, and then that's how they were included in the Rule 53 discovery documentation?
I would assume so, yes, that's correct.
Can we just refer to TK3, which is the email that the public protector sent you, in which she says, I'll go through it and we will meet to finalize, ask the SSA to provide input and economist, which you say was inexplicably excluded from the Rule 53 discovery and was never disclosed until now, which is obviously when you deposed to your affidavit in December 2019. How did you manage to disclose it in December 2019 if it was written in 2017 and your emails, particularly your emails between yourself and Advocate Mkhwebane, were removed from your laptop?
Okay, I did print it out on the Mimecast application. I think it's an application that's used to back up emails. It was the one of the emails that I fortunately found on Mimecast, but some of the other emails were not there.
So did you retrieve it then in August 2019, is that correct? When you got your laptop back, sorry.
I'm not so sure when I retrieved it, but I did notice that some of the emails from the PP on Mimecast were there, and this was one of the emails that was there.
I just have two more short questions, Chair. Mr. Kakani, when you were asked by the public protector in May 2017 to run it past a third person, and then she suggests Mr. Matlawe, did you send it to Mr. Matlawe or the third eye or another eye to look at it, the draft report?
Yes, if I had received those instructions, I would have carried them out. So naturally, I believe that I would have sent that email for the draft to Mr. Matlawe.
And then on the 17th of June, when you wrote back to the public protector and you said, unfortunately, Matlawe not here, would that have been that you sent the report to Mr. Matlawe for his third eye to look over it, or the third person to look over it, then you were to receive it back from Mr. Matlawe after he had checked it or polished, quality assured it or looked at it, and then you submitted it to the public protector? What does it mean by Mr. Matlawe was not here? Was he, you sent it and you didn't get it back, or I don't understand that.
The meaning, Chair, of Mr. Matlawe is not here, I think maybe I was meaning that he was not present at the workplace at the time. But maybe just to give more clarity, the draft on May 2017 and the final report on June 2017, these were two different documents. The one in May, it was just a draft which was still incomplete, but the one in June was, if I call it a complete final draft.
Now, I think we understand that, Mr. Kakane, but because it was an iterative process. You drafted, it was redrafted, it was the public protector's instruction was that you send it to Mr. Matlawe for a third eye or another person to look at it before it was finalized. So when you sent the report on the 17th of June to the public protector, it had come back from Mr. Matlawe after he had looked at it. Am I correct?
I think in May, when I was instructed to do so, I did give it to Mr. Matlawe. I'm not so sure whether I received it back. My memory would need to be refreshed on that. But also on the final draft, that was now around 17 June 2017, I was also supposed to send that one also to Mr. Matlawe, but he was not available at work.
But in your affidavit,
that must be your last take.
I wasn't expecting to have to do follow-ups within this, but it will be my last. I'm just trying to understand, in your affidavit you say that you mentioned to Mr. Matlawe that the document, the report was released, and he was taken aback. I'm really struggling to understand. You sent it to Mr. Matlawe. You say you followed that instruction. You received the report back, you assume. Then the report was released, and he's taken aback that he never got to see it.
Yes. So usually the final report, that would be the draft, the final draft around June 2017. That draft or the final draft was supposed to be sent to Mr. Matlawe, and he could not be found on that day. So I did indicate to him that the report was never QA'd, and he was taken aback by that suggestion.
Can I just wrap up, Chair? Can I, Mr. Kakane, the report that you sent on the 17th of June to the public protector as a final draft, was it the same report that was published on the 19th of June, 2 days later? Thank you.
I think more or less it was the same report. Because what I remember is that because Matlawe was not there, and I did indicate to the PP that Matlawe was not there, she then did her own quality assurance of the final report, and then she signed it on the 19th, I think.
So, Mr. Kakane, the report that was released on the 19th of June was, as you say, more or less the report that you wrote?
That's right.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, Honorable Aaron. And thank you, Mr. Gekana. It's just 15:32 now. We'll take a 15-minute break. When we come back, I will invite Honorable Hermans to take the stand, a tea break, back in 15 minutes. Colleagues, thank you.
Thank you, sir.